Zachs Erech Perek Ches Mishnah Hintel Perek Tes Mishnah Aleph. The second half of this Perek talks about Cheirem, and as we started seeing in the previous Mishnah, there are two different types of Cheirem. One is called Cheirem Benek Habayis, which is essentially just a way of donating a item to the Beis HaMikdash, and that item would be sold, and the amount of money which is got for selling it would be used for the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash. And so Cheirem Benek Habayis is virtually just another way of donating something to be Hekdesh, to be in the possession of the Beis HaMikdash, and that's just a term which the Torah gives for donating something to be used for the Beis HaMikdash. The other type of Cheirem is called Cheirem Koyanim, and that is when somebody designates something to be given to the Koyanim, and it would gain sanctity and cannot be used as soon as a person designates it as Cheirem Koyanim. And once it has been given to a Kohen, however, he can use it just like regular property. Now it's the second type of Cheirem, Cheirem Koyanim, which occupies the discussion of the Mishnayos over here, and the Mishnah tells us firstly that only the permanent owner of the item itself is able to designate it to be Cheirem Koyanim. And therefore, Amarchem Menoy Vitoy, one who declares his son or daughter to be a Cheirem, Avde Vishiv Choseo Ivrim, or his Jewish male or female slaves, although a non-Jewish slave is considered to be the total monetary possession of his master, this is not the case regarding Jewish slaves. Usde Miknosa, or if somebody declares his Ste Mikno to be Cheirem Koyanim, a Ste Mikno is a field which has been bought from somebody who will not become the permanent owner because the field will go back to the original owner during the Yovel year. Once every 50 years, like we learned earlier on in this perek and the previous perek. So effectively, he only has the rights to the usage of the field for all of the years until Yovel, but he didn't ever become the owner of the field itself, because he's not the permanent owner. If you think about it, anybody who owns something only for a temporary amount of time effectively only owns the usage. He owns the right to make use of that item, but he does not own the item itself. So in all of these cases, Elon Chromim, the Cheirem would not be valid at all, She'en on the Machim Dovah She'en Shaloi, because one is not able to declare something which he does not own, the item itself, as a Cheirem. Even though one does have the right to sell his daughter until she's of a certain age as a slave, nevertheless, he does not own her, and that's a special right which the Torah provides, but he still does not own her, and therefore he would not be able to declare her or his son to be a Cheirem. The remaining part of this Mishnah talks about Kohanim and Leviim. And the truth of the matter is that it's really two different discussions, what the status is regarding Kohanim and what the status is regarding Leviim, although the Mishnah does seem to combine the two. There are different ways to understand what exactly the Mishnah is referring to. We are going to understand that the extent of the discussion regarding Kohanim refers specifically to movable items. According to the conclusion of the Gemara, if one declares a piece of land to be Cheirem Koyanim, then that land is given to the Koyanim who are serving in the Beis HaMikdash during that time. There was a rotation of different Koyanim who would serve in the Beis HaMikdash. Whoever happens to be serving in the Beis HaMikdash during that week, those are the Koyanim who would receive any Cheirem Koyanim which had been declared that week when it comes to land. However, regarding movable property, according to the conclusion of the Gemara, the one who declares the movable property to be for Cheirem Koyanim is able to choose which Kohen to give it to, and does not necessarily go to the Koyanim who are serving in the Beis HaMikdash during that week. Now, because the one who declares the movable item to be Cheirem Koyanim is able to choose to which Kohen to give it, it emerges that according to all opinions in this Mishnah, a Kohen is not able to declare a movable item to be for Cheirem Koyanim, because that item is already in the possession of a Kohen. So it's as if the Cheirem is fulfilled already. If it were land, then it would be given to other Kohanim, the ones who are serving in the Beis HaMikdash that week. But since the address, so to speak, of Cheirem Koyanim of movable items can be any Kohen, so a Kohen himself cannot declare anything, any movable item, to be Cheirem Koyanim, because that item is already with a Kohen. That's the discussion regarding Koyanim. There's a different discussion which the Mishnah is going to have regarding Leviim. And the Mishnah itself will explain the reasons for the various opinions regarding Leviim. But the Mishnah itself seems to combine the two. Kohanim and Leviim eino machrimin. Kohanim and Leviim cannot declare their possessions to be Cheirem Koyanim. De Rabbi Yehuda, that is the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. However, Rabbi Shimon, Omer Rabbi Shimon says, HaKohanim eino machrimin. It's true that the Kohanim cannot declare any of their possessions to be Cheirem, like we explained. This is referring specifically to movable items. Shehacharom Shalohem, because the Charomim already belong to them, and they themselves are a Kohen. However, Halevim Achrimen. Levim can declare their property to be Chirmei Koyanim, She'en Acharom Shalohem, because the things which they are declaring to be Chirim do not go to them. The address for Chirmei Koyanim is, as the name suggests, Koyanim, not Levim. Rabbi Omer Rabbi says, Nirim Diri Rabbi Yehuda Bekarkois. The words, the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda, seems to be the correct one regarding land. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Ki achuzas oilom hulohem, because it will be for them, referring to the Kohanim and the Levim, as an eternal inheritance. This is essentially the Torah, like we learned at the end of the previous perek, that a Kohen and a Levi who have a stei achuza, which means that they are considered to be the permanent owners, they must forever remain the permanent owners. They cannot get rid of that permanent ownership, and as such, they cannot declare it to be Chirmei Kohanim. However, this entire pasuk is only talking about land, so therefore with Rabbi Shimon, the words of Rabbi Shimon seem to be logical and correct, but metaltlin regarding movable items, that there's no reason why Levi should not be able to declare it Chirmei Koyanim and give it to a Koyen, She'en Acharom Shalohem, because the address of the Charomim of the Chirmei Koyanim is not the Levim, it's only the Koyanim, so that explains why a Koyen cannot declare any movable items to be Chirmei Koyanim, because it's already found with a Koyen. However, a Levi can. Now, the truth is, Rabbi Shimon agrees with Rabbi Yehuda regarding land, which actually fits very well with what we explained earlier on, because Rabbi Shimon anyway is only talking about movable items. The entire reason that Koyanim cannot do this is regarding movable items. And so when Rabbi Shimon argued against Rabbi Yehuda, he was only talking about movable items. He agrees with Rabbi Yehuda that neither Koyanim nor Levim can sell land for the reason that Rebbe gave, because the Pasuk says that their permanent property has to remain with them. Now, Rabbi Yehuda also agrees that, logically speaking, Rabbi Shimon is correct. Why should a Levi not be able to declare a movable item to be Chirmei Koyanim? However, he learns from the Pesukim that we compare movable items to non-movable items. So just like Levim are not able to declare land to be Chirmei Koyanim according to everybody, so too movable items, because they are compared to each other in the Pasuk, whereas Rabbi Shimon does not compare the two. Mishnah Vav, Chirmei Koyanim, Charomim, which are designated for the Koyanim, Ein Lahem Pidyon, they cannot be redeemed. Rather, the item itself, Ela Netonim LaKoyanim, needs to be given to Koyanim. After one made that declaration, he's not able to then redeem it by paying its value and only giving its value to Koyanim. He must give the item itself to the Koyanim. And this is a law which is explicitly stated in the Torah. Right, continues the Mishnah. Rabbi Huda Mesir says, Stam Charomim Levet Kabayis, if somebody does not specify which type of Chirim he is declaring, then that item would be given to the Beis HaMikdosh for the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdosh. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, Kol Chirim, any Chirim, Kodesh Kodoshim Hu LaHashem, is considered to be Holy of Holies for Hashem. That's referring to the Beis HaMikdosh. Now, it's not true that every type of Chirim goes towards the Beis HaMikdosh. There's a type of Chirim which goes to the Koyanim. And so what the Pasuk must mean is that any Chirim which is unspecified would go towards the Beis HaMikdosh. However, the Chachomim say, Stam Charomim LaKoyanim, a unspecified Chirim, if somebody just says this item is going to be Chirim, without specifying which type, it would go to the Koyanim. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says, regarding the law that a piece of land which had been designated towards the Beis HaMikdosh as a regular hekdash, a regular donation, and the owner hadn't redeemed it before Yovel arrived, like we learnt in great length in the previous perek and the first half of this perek, that land would go to the Koyanim if it wasn't redeemed before Yovel arrived. And the Pasuk, the way that the Torah says that is Kestei HaChirem LaKoyen Tia Achuzasai, that his Stei Achuza, this piece of land which he had made into Hekdesh, will go to a Koyen, like a field of Chirem. So you see that the Torah itself refers to Chirmei Koyanim just as a regular Chirim, without specifying that it's Chirmei Koyanim. So we have proof from a pasuk in the Torah itself that the word Chirim, without specifying which type, refers to Chirmei Koyanim. Now the Mishnah asks, Imkein, if so, Lomo Nemar Kol Chirim Kodesh Kodeshim Hu LaHashem? Why does the pasuk say that any Chirim will be Holy of Holies and go towards Hashem? That implies the opposite, that a regular unspecified Chirim would go towards the Beis HaMikdosh. The Mishnah answers, we learn a totally different law from this Pasuk. Shehu chol al kodshei kodshim val kodshim kalim. That a declaration of Chirmei Koyanim would be valid even when stated regarding a korban, an animal which is designated as a sacrifice, either koche kochim, which is a higher level sacrifice which has a higher degree of sanctity, or kochim kalim, which is a sacrifice which has a lower level of holiness and sanctity. And this is really going to be explained in the next Mishnah, that although that animal itself definitely needs to be brought as a korban, nevertheless, the one who is bringing it as a korban still has a certain level of monetary rights over that animal, and as such, the cheirem would be valid to a certain extent, as the next Mishnah will explain. Mishnah Zayin, Machrim Olmas Kadoshov, one is able to declare a korban which he is going to bring, an animal which he has designated as a sacrifice, he is able to make a declaration of cheirem about that animal, being koche kochim, whether the animal has been designated for a sacrifice which has a higher level of holiness, uvein kochim kalim, or whether the animal was designated as a sacrifice which has a lower level of sanctity, the cheirem is valid to a certain extent, as the Mishnah will now immediately explain. There are two ways for somebody to make a vow to bring a korban, a sacrifice. One is by talking about himself, his own obligation, by saying that I am making a vow to bring a sacrifice, without specifying which animal he's going to use. And once he makes that vow, he is then able to designate a particular animal to use as the fulfillment of his vow. However, if that animal which he designates then dies or gets lost, he will be obligated to replace that animal with a different animal and bring that as his korban. Since his original vow was not limited to that specific animal, but it was rather a general vow to bring a animal as a sacrifice, even if he then designated a specific animal, his vow still includes any animal, and therefore even if the designated animal is lost, he will still be obligated to bring a replacement as a korban. On the other hand, if his original vow was limited to a specific animal, he said that I'm declaring this animal as a sacrifice that I'm going to bring, and then that animal gets lost or dies, he has no obligation whatsoever to replace it, because the entire content of his vow only included and was limited to this specific animal. Now, if you think about it, in the first scenario, where he originally made a general vow, and then he designated a specific animal to use for the fulfillment of his general, non-specific vow, that animal is now worth its full value to him. Because if the animal gets lost or something, he will need to replace it with a whole new animal. On the other hand, in the second scenario, that animal is not really worth any money for the owner. If it gets lost, he won't need to spend any more money. However, he still does have a benefit from the animal in that he's able to bring it as a korban. That's considered to be a benefit for him. And so the Mishnah says, Im neder, if the animal which he declared to be a cheirem was an animal which had been designated as the fulfillment of a non-specific vow, such that the animal is worth its full value to him, because if it gets lost or something happens to it, he'll need to replace it, then Nosinus Adomim, he's obligated to give the value of that animal to Kohanim. He can't give the animal itself, however, the fulfillment of Chermei Kohanim over here would require him to give the value of that animal to Kohanim. Whereas Im Nedova, if the animal which he declared as a Chermei Kohanim was one which had been designated as a korban in a specific vow, so then Nosinus Tuivosa, he's obligated to give the amount of benefit which he derives from that animal. How much is that animal now worth to him? The Mishnah explains, Shorze Oila, if somebody says, this ox is going to be a korban oila, he makes a vow regarding a specific animal, how much is that worth for him? We measure how much a person would be willing to pay for this ox, to bring it up as a korban oila, which he's not obligated to bring. How cheap would an animal need to be sold for in order that somebody who is not obligated to bring a korban, and he wasn't necessarily planning on bringing a korban, would buy that animal only in order to bring it as a korban, as a sacrifice? That's the way of measuring how much this is considered to be worth for the one who had designated it to bring it as a korban. Continues the Mishnah, Habachor, a firstborn animal of a sheep or a goat or a cow, this animal has sanctity to it and it needs to be given to a koyein. Bein tomim, whether the animal does not have any wounds and as such the koyein will be obligated to bring it as a korban. Bein bal mum, or whether the animal does have a wound or blemish, which invalidates it from being bought as a korban, and therefore the kohen would be able to keep it for himself. Machrimin oisai, the owner of that firstborn, before he's given it to the kohen, is able to declare it as a cheirem. However, once again, he's not considered to be the full owner of this animal because he needs to give it to a Koyein. So how would he redeem it, meaning how much of the worth of the animal, that's certainly the only thing he can declare to be a cheirem, he doesn't own the item itself. The question is, how much money does he have to give to Koyanim when he makes this declaration? We measure how much a person would be willing to pay for this firstborn animal, in order to give it to his daughter's son or to his nephew. Meaning, how much would I pay somebody who has a firstborn animal and he has the choice to give it to any Koyein? How much would I pay him in order that he give it to a Koyein of my choice? That's essentially the worth of a firstborn animal for the owner himself. He has the ability, although he doesn't own the animal, he has the ability to choose which Koyein to give it to. That's the extent of how much he owns, as it were. And so that is the amount of money that he will have to give to Koyanim when he declares his firstborn animal to be for Chermei Koyanim. Now, this whole Mishnah was really coming off of the end of the previous Mishnah that taught that according to the Chachomim, we learn from the Pasuk Kol Chirem Kodesh Kodashim Hu LaHashem, that there is this concept of declaring things which are really supposed to be bought as korbanos, and therefore no longer fully owned by the one bringing the korban. Nevertheless, he is able to declare it as Chermei Koyanim, and although he can't give the item itself to the Koyanim, he would give the value of however much ownership remains with him to the Koyanim. And that's what this Mishnah has described so far. This is known as the concept of Hekdesh Ilui, where although the item itself does not go to the Beis HaMikdash, the value of the item does now need to be given to the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Yishmael is going to bring a different source for this idea of Hekdesh Ilui other than the Pasuk brought in the previous Mishnah. Kasuv Echad Oimer, one Pasuk, talking about a firstborn animal which needs to be bought as a korban, one Pasuk regarding a firstborn animal says, Takdish, that you are able to designate it towards the Beis HaMikdash. The Kasuv Acher Omer, but a different Pasuk regarding a firstborn animal, says, Al Takdish, you cannot designate it towards the Beis HaMikdash. Yev Shalom Ar Takdish, but it's impossible to say that you're able to designate it towards the Beis HaMikdash, Shekvai Nemar Al Takdish, because the Pasuk elsewhere says that you cannot make it into Hekdash. Yev Shalom Ar Takdish, but it's impossible to explain simply that you cannot make it Hekdash and designate it towards the Beis HaMikdash, Shekvai Nemar Takdish, because the Pasuk elsewhere says that you can designated towards the Beis HaMikdash. Emer me'ata, so conclude from this, that makdishay ato hekdash ilui, you are able to designate it as hekdash ilui, which means that its value alone would need to be given to the Beis HaMikdash for the upkeep of the Beis HaMikdash. Ve'inato makdishay hekdash mizbeach, but you cannot make it into regular hekdash to be brought as a korban itself, because obviously you need to give it to a koyein, and the koyein will bring it as a korban. Now, this entire source is talking about designating the money of this sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash. However, Rabbi Shmuel understands that the same goes for Chermei Koyanim. One is also able to designate the value of a korban to the Koyanim. The main point that he is bringing is the source for this concept of Hekdash Ilui, of donating the value of the item to the Beis HaMikdash, and the same would go for Chermei Koyanim. Perek Tes Mishnah Aleph. This perek goes back to the discussion of the 7th perek and the first half of the 8th perek, and that is regarding a steah chuzah, a land which somebody owns permanently. And the Mishnah says, HaMeicher Sodeh B'Shas HaYovel, one who sells his field which he owns permanently, it's a steah chuzah, he sells it at a time that the laws of Yovel apply, when all or the majority at least of the Jewish people are in Eretz Yisrael. As well as the law which the Torah says that returns to the permanent owner when Yovel arrives, in addition to that, the Torah also teaches that the permanent owner has the right to force the buyer to resell it back to him at any point until Yovel arrives. He'll of course be required to pay him for it, based on how many years are still remaining towards the Yovel, but he's able to force him to resell it to him. However, the Torah also teaches that Eino Mutar Ligol Pachas Mishteishanim. He is not allowed to redeem it, he's not allowed to buy it back, less than 2 years since the time of the sale. Shenema, as the Pasuk says, B'mishpar Shnei Tavuos Yimkar Lach, according to the number of years of producing produce, he will sell it back to you. The Torah uses the term years in the plural. Now one can also note that the Pasuk doesn't just say that according to the number of years he will sell it to you, but it says according to the number of years of producing crop in the field. And we learn from there that Hoysa Shnas Shedofein, if one of those 2 years was plagued by strong winds which dried up the produce, the Eirokoin, or the crop was diseased with something which caused the produce to become yellow and not good quality at all, Eishavies, or if one of the 2 years was a Shmita year when it's forbidden to work the land, Eino Oiloloi does not count as one of the 2 years. One has to allow the buyer to at least enjoy the field on a guaranteed level for at least 2 years. And that means being able to benefit from the field and producing crop. And if the mission says, Eino Oiloloi min aminyon, it does not count as one of the 2 years. Nora, however, if the buyer just ploughed the entire field and didn't sow it with seeds, Oyahivira, or he just left it unplowed, he didn't do anything, then Oiloloi min aminyon, that definitely does count as one of his 2 years, because it's his fault for not utilizing his field. Continues the Mishnah, Rabbi Elazar says, Machor lo lifnei Rosh Hashanah, if he sold him the field just before Rosh Hashanah, v'him le'a peiros, and the field was full of produce ready to be harvested, harizah oichel mena sholish tuas l'shteshonim, the one who bought it has the right to eat from that field 3 loads of crops from 3 different years, whilst only being in the field for 2 years. We don't judge it only based on the amount of crop that he's going to get. Essentially, he has the field for 2 years, and therefore if he manages to harvest the field 3 times within those 2 years, he has that right. Only once 2 years have passed would the permanent owner have the right to buy back the field according to the number of remaining years until the Yovel year.